From 1972 to 1995, U.S. intelligence maintained programs of remote viewing. Under the guidance of Stanford Research Institute, the agencies involved included the Defense Intelligence Agency, the National Security Agency, the Drug Enforcement Agency, and the Joint Chiefs of Staff, all under the aegis of the CIA.
The reason that U.S. intelligence became involved in remote viewing was that they discovered that the USSR had a program already up and running. Now, the Soviet Union operated within a paradigm that was very strictly atheistic and materialistic. There was no room for spirituality, religion, supernatural. And so U.S. intelligence knew that if Russia had this program going, it must be because it was yielding useful data, scientifically verifiable data, data that might give them a strategic advantage. And in the climate of the Cold War at that time, there was no way that the USA was going to allow the Soviet Union to have a strategic advantage over anything. And so if the Russians had a program of remote viewing, then the USA had to have one. And all of a sudden, US intelligence was in a game of remote viewing catch-up.
Of course, all governments want to spy on their allies and enemies, and no government wants to be spied on. And so US intelligence began to fund a series of remote viewing programs under various names, including Project Stargate and the Scanning Initiative. Before long, some notable outcomes had been achieved. On April 28, 1973, Ingo Swann, a remote viewer in the program, performed a remote viewing of the planet Jupiter. He described and sketched rings around the planet, which no astronomer had ever seen or even postulated. 9 months later, the NASA probe Voyager arrived at Jupiter and successfully filmed the enormous rings orbiting the huge planet. The rings were exactly as Ingo Swann had reported from his remote viewing 9 months before the photographs arrived.
I was involved recently in an experiment in which we were working with young kids to heighten their visual sensitivity. And so each child would wear a blindfold that totally blocked out the light, but enabled them to open their eyes and look into the darkness. Now, I was with a particular child who were called Jason, and at the beginning of the exercise, he could see absolutely nothing with this blindfold on. And then after working with the trainer for a few minutes, he was able to call the colors of cards being flashed in front of his face. So I'm watching this and thinking, okay, well, maybe there's enough of a leakage of light somehow, at some microscopic level, that means he can discern the colors. But then the cards were flashed behind his head, and Jason could still call the names of the colors as they were changed. And then the trainer put colors back to back, and Jason could call the order of the colors. So this was now stretching my ability to explain what was happening. This had gone beyond heightening the sensitivity of the eyes. It had gone beyond color receptors on the face. This was now behind Jason's head. And I'm thinking, well, is this something to do with the electromagnetic field of each candidate, somehow tuning into the wider EMF? And then it went to the next level. Now, Jason was reading from a book he'd never read before and reading fluently, bearing in mind he could see absolutely nothing at the beginning of the experiment. Then color here, then color here. Now he's reading words off a page. Then the trainer did something that took it to a whole other level. Out of the blue, he suddenly said, "Jason, what am I holding underneath my desk?" And Jason said, "Oh, I can see two circles of glass. There's black wire around them, and then I can see two sticks of black metal or black wire." And the trainer pulls out from under his desk a pair of black wire-framed spectacles with big round lenses. Now, there was no way Jason had seen that because that desk was off camera in another country. The trainer was in Canada. We were in Australia. So now I'm thinking, okay, this isn't just about heightening visual skills. We're doing remote viewing here. This cannot be heightening receptors on the face or in the eye. This has to be something to do with the nature of space itself and the nature of human consciousness. And that small experiment really echoed the implications of Ingo Swann's viewing in April 1973, because to remote view something at a distance of 500 million miles goes well beyond having good eyesight. It has to do with the nature of time and space and human consciousness and how all those things interact.
In 1974, the heiress Patty Hearst was kidnapped from her Berkeley apartment. Remote viewer Pat Price was able to identify the location of the car in which she'd been taken. Pat then went on to describe the layout of the apartment in which Patty Hearst was held and the closet in which she was confined. In 1975, a Russian bomber crashed in the African country of Zaire. Naturally, US defense was anxious to retrieve the downed jet before the Russians could get to it. The problem was that for all their technology, US defense simply couldn't locate it. President Jimmy Carter later described what happened next. He said, "We were not able to find it by surveillance, so the director of the CIA heard about a woman in California who was a medium or something, I don't know the title for her, and she gave him the latitude and longitude of the plane's whereabouts, and we located the plane where she said it was." Incidentally, the woman in question was not just a medium. She was an officer of the US Air Force.
I think what's very interesting here is the separation of information. That's because President Jimmy Carter was and is a devout evangelical Christian believer. If the average evangelical Christian had said they were involved in something like remote viewing, they would be told within their church either that it was nonsense or that it was demonic. And in some churches, that might get them thrown out, might get them excommunicated. However, for an evangelical in power, it's another set of information. An evangelical president knows this is a useful human technology that can yield significant information and that it's perfectly legitimate for his department to engage in. One set of information about remote viewing for the public and another for the powers. Now, this makes perfect sense because no government wants a general public that can remote view documents on a minister's desk. It serves government for the public to believe that remote viewing is something that's been debunked or discredited while secretly practicing it in private. And this parallel track of information about remote viewing, where you can find iterations of that all through the ages, and a very interesting parallel in the foundations of British intelligence 400 years ago.
The funding for the CIA's remote viewing operations continued and was maintained by a succession of presidential administrations.
Now, the remote viewing program, like any program, had to justify its funding from year to year. And the only way it could do that was if it was yielding useful information, information with a strategic intelligence value. By 1983, it had done that because John Marsh, the Secretary of Army, was presented with a report in 1983 logging 700 remote viewing missions, 85% of which had been able to demonstrate the efficacy of remote viewing, and 350 of which were deemed to have provided information of significant intelligence value. That's the only way it kept going, and it did. The funding was maintained through a number of presidential administrations. From 1972 to 1995, that's the presidential administrations of Richard Nixon, Gerald Ford, Jimmy Carter, Ronald Reagan, George H.W. Bush, and Bill Clinton. The program continued only because it was providing verifiable information with an intelligence value to it.
Since those in power wish to do the spying and not be spied upon, it isn't difficult to see why skills like remote viewing might not find their way into a science museum, textbook, or school syllabus. For those reasons, the Christian prejudice against these kinds of phenomena as being either impossible or demonic becomes a useful button to press. Eventually, this kind of ingrained prejudice came back to bite the program.
What brought the period of remote viewing within the CIA to an official close had nothing to do with its efficacy as a tool. It was theology. A new department leader was appointed in 1995 who had oversight of these operations, and he was a more fundamentalist kind of Christian. And in his faith worldview, anything that was supernatural, anything that could not be explained, had to be demonic. And he would have nothing to do with anything in the departments he was oversighting that hinted of anything demonic, thank you very much. And so purely because of his faith and his theological worldview, the program of remote viewing was shut down. Again, there's a very curious parallel as to what happened to remote viewing in British Secret Service 4 centuries before.
Thanks for watching. Click here to watch the full video.